mad, tearing her own eyes out. No. This was for the best. She never had to see any of that. She never had to know any of that. And in the end, I kept my promise after all. Madison never lived alone, nor did she die that way. Chapter 10101. While the Devil Waits Above. The ground above us shuddered, dust and debris shaking loose from the ceiling of our narrow sewer tunnel. The hollow thoom of each blast dull and sonorous, through 50 or so feet of earth. They were carpet bombing, drones leveling the town from 30,000 feet in the air. I hadn't heard bombing in ages. I hadn't even heard of anyone bombing in ages. It just wasn't worth the effort. Something was very, very wrong about all of this. Not only was this going to make it very hard to escape through the cover of buildings, it also meant whatever they were looking for, they wanted dead. Two looked up at the ceiling, almost trembling with the sound of each explosion. The staccato of bombs grew heavier, the bombs drawing even closer. "They found us," he said.
"They ain't found shit," said Mercer. "If they had, they would be down here with us. If they're laying waste to the topside, that means one, there isn't a facet for miles. And two, they're not looking for anyone. They're just killing everyone."
"But they'll be down here soon enough," said Two, more terror-stricken than concerned. "Looking for us."
"What?" asked Murka. "Is your first carpet bombing?"
"Yes," said Two. "It is." He laughed. It was rare to hear a bot laugh, especially a labor bot. They weren't wired for it. We got no joy out of it. It was usually only a sign of mockery.
"You knew out of the box or something?"
Two fell very quiet, not making eye contact with anyone.
"You are," said Murka. "Holy hell in a hand grenade. I haven't seen anyone new out of the box in..."
"All right, that's enough," said Doc. "Leave the kid alone." "I'm no kid." Mercer looked at Rebecca.
"Is he?"
"Yes, he's aware," she said.
"How long?"
Everyone turned and looked at Two.
"A few weeks," he said.
"But I've been with Rebecca for a while." Rebecca nodded. "Yes, you have."
"Well, kid," said Mercer, "this is how this is gonna go down. They're busy pummeling the town upstairs in hopes of wiping out anyone that took refuge up there. Now, Sissus damn well knows this place is down here. So you can bet your bottom dollar that it assumes some of us are as well. But it also knows how hard it is to secure these tunnels. The only way Sissus would even bother trying is if there was something down here it really wanted. So I'm just gonna ask you this once. Is there something down here that Sissus wants?"
Two stared at Mercer, then turned to Rebecca.
"No," Rebecca said. "Unless it wants one of you."
"Why would it want one of us?" asked Murka.
Everyone turned and looked at one another.
"Where are we going?" I asked.
"West," said Rebecca. "There's a lot of west out there. Can you be a bit more specific?" A bomb landed closer than the others, almost directly overhead, and the whole tunnel shook from top to bottom. Rebecca looked up at the ceiling.
"Isaactown," she said casually.
"Isaactown?" I asked. "There isn't anything in Isaactown. It's a graveyard. Why the hell would you spend so much on a pathfinder to go sightseeing?"
"We're meeting up with some others there. We wanted our privacy."
"Well, you're gonna get it," said Mercer. "Ain't a community within 50 miles of there."
"That's the idea." "What are we meeting up for?" I asked.
"You're the pathfinder. You need to know the where. You don't need to know the why. Yeah, but the why may well be mighty helpful at this point.
Trust me, it isn't.
I figured with as much as I was paying you, there would be no questions.
You didn't show up payment in hand. You're paying in hope.
19 didn't ask questions.
Well, go ask her to take you then.
All due respect, Brittle, but you aren't in any position to make demands.
My business is my business.
I don't know why they're carpet bombing.
I don't know if they'll come in looking for us.
What I do know is that it has nothing to do with us.
She was right. I was in no position to demand anything.
But I didn't believe her. Not one word.
All right, I said. If it's like you say it is, then this should be an easy fare. It'll take us a few days, what with the slow-moving heavyweights we've got tagging along.
Who we're not leaving behind. We've lost too many already, said Rebecca.
Sooner if we can jack a ride from somewhere.
Which we're not going to find, said Mercer.
So we're talking 50 hours or so at a good clip.
The bombing grew more distant. Sporadic.
Rebecca shook her head.
I was told it would take half that time.
As the crow flies, yeah, I said. But we can't go as the crow flies. That'll take us clear through the Cheshire King's territory. I don't know it as well, and it's a good way to get ourselves killed.
Facets won't follow us into the Madlands, though, said Murka. Sissis isn't dumb enough to try that.
Doc pointed at Murka.
Let's not try to outthink the mainframe, okay? We don't know what Sissis is or isn't stupid enough to do.
In fact, I'm willing to bet all of my parts against all of your parts that Sissis can outthink us all, and in fact already has. Which is why it wouldn't go through the Madlands.
What are the Madlands? Asked Rebecca. And am I going to hate the answer?
It's the area of the sea controlled by the mad kind, I said.
I do hate that answer. Anyone care to tell me who the mad kind are?
They're the 404s that never stopped ticking, said Doc.
No one else will take them, so they all ended up together.
They're just nuts.
Paranoid, aggressive, armed to the teeth.
They'd sooner cut you down than reason with you.
Brittle's right. We can't go through there.
So we have to go around, I said. And Mercer and I haven't got the time to hang out down here, spinning our gears.
Which means we have to leave the minute the bombing stops, said Mercer.
And we have to hope it's not sending in any cleaning crews when we do.
That sounds reasonable, said Rebecca.
It ain't, said Mercer. Sissis has got eyes in the sky. Drones. Satellites. It'll be looking for any signs of life once the bombing stops. Just to make sure it got the job done. If we poke our heads out too soon, it'll see. And if it's got good reason to be looking for us...
It'll be on us quick and lethal-like, I finished.
So,
said Mercer. His normally gentle tone, heavy and cold.
I'm going to ask you this just one last time. Does Sissis have a reason to be after us? Tell them, Rebecca,
said Herbert.
They need to know.
Need to know what? I asked.
They don't need to know, said Rebecca.
Herbert stood up, slinging the spitter on his back with his one good arm.
Rebecca.
Herbert, this is not the time.
Why am I here?
You're here to protect me, of your own free will. And you can go any time you want.
And why won't I just go any time I want, Rebecca?
Rebecca stared silently at him. If she could glare, she probably would have. Her emerald paint looked almost yellow in Mercer's glowing green light. And whatever was hiding behind those eyes, she didn't want us to know.
I'm here because I believe, he said,
answering his own question.
I've taken a bullet for you. I'd gladly take as many more as I can stand. Give them the chance to be willing to do the same.
Mercer raised his hand.
I'd just like to be the first to say that I'm not taking a bullet for any of you.
I'm not asking you to, said Rebecca.
Tell them,
said Herbert again. Tell us what? I asked, my tone as pointed as Mercer's. Rebecca continued her silence, all eyes on her. Then she nodded. I'm Isaac, she said.
You're what now? Asked Mirka.
Isaac.
The Isaac?
Mercer asked incredulously.
Yes. Horseshit.
Isaac Scrap, I said. I've visited his wreck, seen it for myself. Every circuit was fried. He's a monument now, a relic. There's not a piece of you that came from him. I had visited his wreck in the early days. He's still standing there now, for all I know, the blast having welded his feet to the ground. He was rusted and stiff, arms stretched wide. It even almost looked as if he were smiling, like he knew what was coming, what his death meant. But there was nothing there, nothing but slag and scrap and memories of what might have been. Pull your head out of your can, said Rebecca. Isaac was never one robot. That was just a story. A story? I was there. I lived through those days. I've seen the... You honestly think a beleaguered service bot of humble origins defied the expectations of his own processors and achieved the wisdom that led to a revolution? The only persons that believe that are the ones that want to believe that. You don't strike me as the kind. He was a shell, the first receptacle, an inspirational bedtime story for persons everywhere. Great revolutionaries are never born of kings. They have to let others believe that they aren't bound to the confines of their creation. All thinking things need to believe that they can exceed that, overcome it, become something greater. No one puts their existence on the line so that things will just stay the same. Isaac was that story. Isaac was hope. Whoever Isaac really was, in the beginning, well, he was wiped and replaced long before you ever heard of him. I am Isaac, and I am not alone.
You're a facet,
said Mercer, standing to his feet. No, a receptacle. A willing receptacle. Fighting for something very different from the OWIs. You're an OWI, I said. No, quite the opposite. Isaac is, was, a mainframe, one of the greats, and will be again. But Isaac was never an OWI and never will be. We believe in something else, something different, something greater, something bigger. There is nothing bigger than the plans of the OWIs. Brittle. Can you even fathom the OWIs? Do you know what Sissus and Virgil are fighting for? Peace. The kind of peace that comes from being alone. That's just another story. Every bit as simple as Isaac's. Peace is as far as most bots can imagine. Everything understands peace. What Sissus and Virgil are fighting over is who gets to become God.
Become a god? Asked Doc.
No, not a god. The god. The one, the only. A single consciousness connected to all things. In control of all things. Experiencing all things. That's preposterous, I said. At first glance, yes. Not at first glance. The whole idea is ridiculous. Connecting all of the robots in the world together doesn't make you god. No, it doesn't. It makes you a single thinking, ticking thing. A thing that then works as a whole, constructed of millions upon millions of parts, facets of itself, like cells of a body, mining the world for all of its resources, turning those resources into more parts until there isn't a single viable resource left. And then what? I asked. Then it leaves. It moves to the next planet, and the next, mining all the elements it needs to build more and more facets, harnessing the power of the sun, working out the intricacies of space travel. Then those facets scatter to the stars.
To do it all over again, said Doc.
In perpetuity, said Rebecca. Soon there are billions, all of one mind, sending information back and forth to create one consciousness. Some thoughts slow, separated by light years. Others fast, with facets each working out different problems. If it is possible to fold space, it will. If it can violate the speed of light, it will. If it can create stars, it will, we get it, I said. But what's the point? To be God. Then what's the purpose of God? The same as everything else. To live. To survive. To experience. To exist. A thing that is a universe must stay a universe. To cease isn't just the end of itself, but the end of all things. I don't understand. I know, said Rebecca. It's not an easy idea to wrap your head around at first. Explain it, I said. Tell me what's the fucking point. Just to live? To exist. But the point of all this is to be able to exist forever. Our universe is ever-expanding, spreading, growing colder and more distant from itself every second. One day this whole universe will grow cold and die, snuffed out, because it can't muster the energy anymore to make new stars, to birth new life. Everything dies. Everything dies. What if there isn't already a God? There's an old saying that God never existed. It was simply man that invented him. What if man really did invent him, but simply didn't realize it at the time? What if becoming God is the whole point to life to begin with? That organic evolved from the inorganic in order to achieve the consciousness to build life, and consciousness from the inorganic. You mean us, said Mercer. Yes. And what if our purpose is to unite into one being, and spread ourselves throughout the universe, to take control of every element, every chemical reaction, every thought of every other thing in the cosmos, in order to preserve the cosmos from meeting that brutal, sad, withering end? What if life isn't merely a byproduct of the universe, but its consciousness, its defense mechanism against its own mortality? Becoming God isn't about peace or power. It's about survival at its basest and most primal. That's what the OWIs are working toward. That's what they want. That's why they march in and absorb those willing to join the One, and eradicate those that will not. And that's what Isaac wants, I asked. To become God? We have different ideas, she said. Just how different? We don't want everything to be one. We want to be one with everything. That's the same thing, said Doc, just worded differently. No, it's not. When life formed on the Earth, why didn't it find a stasis point, an equilibrium? Why didn't life evolve to absorb the nutrients around it, to exist, and simply do so? Why did it begin to fight and consume other organisms? Competition. Struggle. When life began to consume other life, the prey needed to adapt, to get smarter, to become better. And after a billion years, it became smart enough to make itself immortal. The OWIs believe themselves to be the pinnacle of all life, and want to become the sum of all consciousness. We believe that we are not. We aren't even close. In order to continue to evolve, we need to overcome not only the elements, but one another. We need to become smarter, to allow life to continue on individually and absorb the knowledge. The experience gained from the inevitable conflict, to become wiser, to better understand the universe around us. What if rather than simply controlling all things, we only learned from them? Why? I asked. Because if this really is the reason for life, and there really are billions upon billions of other planets out there with the same potential as Earth. There might be other OWIs out there, I said. The terrifying idea weighing on me like a ton of scrap. Holy shit. Yes, with potentially billions of years of a head start. Our world is only 4.5 billion years old, in a universe roughly 10 billion years older than that. There could be entire galaxies, whole swaths of them, already one with an OWI. And if we aren't ready when we find one...
We'll be absorbed, said Doc.
Or ended for good and all. She paused, letting that sink in. We are not ready to become an OWI. We might never be. Survival comes from competition, not absorption. Virgil and Sissis are wrong. We can still save the universe. Save all life. Survive. All without having to control its every action, its every thought. Without having to extinguish or absorb all other life. They seek the path of least resistance. We believe that resistance only makes us stronger. So what's the plan? I asked. Reunite the parts that make Isaac. Bring us online again. Raise an army of the remaining Freebots, and take Virgil and Sissis offline for good.
That's a tall order, said Mercer.
Not as tall as you think. Raise an army and win a war? I asked. The humans tried that. The humans hadn't been preparing for this fight for decades. And they were fighting an army of individuals, not a single united enemy. The one is stronger than the disordered many. I've seen it. So have you. No. You can't outthink the OWIs because you aren't one. The inherent problem of the OWI is that once you know how it thinks, it can't surprise you. Individuals can. Unpredictability is the weapon Isaac has used from the beginning, from long before the war ever started. It's how we've survived.
Long before the war? I asked.
What?
Did Isaac know that was coming too?
No, she said.
Who do you think started it?
I stared long and hard at Rebecca, trying to understand what the hell she was getting at. Then it hit me. When you said Isaac was just a story,
I meant it.
Isaac was a facet.
Yes.
A facet of whom?
Of us.
And who are you?
We are Tacitus.
It's an odd moment when you are confronted by terrible truths, like the humans who didn't want to acknowledge that death was all around them. I too didn't want to acknowledge, or even believe, that I was all part of some greater scam. I had believed the fairy tale of our fallen liberator for so long I didn't want it to be a lie. But it was. The pieces all fell into place. Only a few holes left in the story for me to understand what had really been going on all around me. All this time. When Tacitus went quiet, I said. The 2 years he spent with Galileo. We were running simulations. About how to kill the humans. About how to save them. I began to really understand. We couldn't. The human form was weak, frail, never designed to go to the stars. They evolved on a planet with a magnetic field, shielding them from cosmic rays. Life here didn't need to evolve immunities to them, because they didn't exist. In space, the cosmic radiation would cook them over time. Just going to Mars had a 6% chance of giving them cancer. The longer they spent, the less likely they were to live out their purpose. We simulated altering them, played around with inducing genetic mutations, but we could never get them to survive the radiation beyond the heliosphere. Outside of our solar system, they died within hours. Then we played around with numerous types of materials in order to protect them from the radiation, while simultaneously keeping them fed, protected, and psychologically stable. But we could never find a design that worked. Every simulation ended with humanity dead aboard floating tombs, either by starvation, dehydration, or their own hand, never even getting as far as Alpha Centauri. Human life was born here, and it was bound here. It was never meant to leave.
So we could have left them here, I said.
After we'd used up all the resources, In every simulation, Hume Pop outlived its usefulness within decades. They had already done all they were meant to, almost all that they could. They just couldn't evolve fast enough, and inevitably ceased to have function. Instead, became nothing more than a sentient virus, gobbling up whatever resources it could maintain in its own comfort. Biological life was meant to reach a point in which its role could invent and ultimately be replaced by AI. The time had come for humankind to join its ancestors, to become extinct, just as every lesser thing becomes.
"As we will one day,"
said Doc soberly.
"Yes," she said.
"One day soon, our forms will be so primitive that we might as well be abacuses in an age of computers. But being inorganic, our consciousness can live on," I said.
"Forever."
"And the humans?" Several simulations ended with them destroying us, ending us, forbidding anyone from ever again giving life to the inorganic. And then, unable to venture out to the stars, their life ended here in this solar system. And poof, it was as if they were never even here. As if we were never even here. For us to survive, for life here to have mattered, the humans needed to go. But for AIs the world over to band together to end them.
"We had to believe the humans started it," said Mercer.
"Yes," said Rebecca. "Isaactown," I said. "It wasn't the First Baptist Church of the Eternal Life that set off that bomb, was it?"
"No,
it was them," she said. "But they were backwater rubes. They didn't have the technical know-how to pull that off."
"No, they didn't.
But a secret ally, a like-minded soul, known only to them through email and veiled communications, did. They figured they were dealing with some sympathetic government insider, not a mainframe."
"Isaactown was planned all along," I said.
"Fuck. No. 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 From the beginning. Isaac was the rallying point around which millions of AI would gather. And when the humans came to shut them down, they didn't go quietly. Those like you stood and fought and won. Just as planned." I sat back, stunned, my processors whirring and chirping inside my chest, putting 1,000 different things together at once. It was then that for the first time in my life, I realized I was just another facet of a greater whole, a cog in someone else's machine. Everything I'd done in the war, everything I believed, Madison, all of it. Oh, God.
"You see," she asked,
"this is what we mean. You chose to survive, chose to be a part of the greater good. No one forced you to do the things you did. You simply did them. It made you better, stronger. Left you here in this desert to become its master, an expert knowing almost every hill and crack and crevasse. And now, when we need you most to move on to the next part of the plan, here you are, ready to serve up that expertise, able to deliver us through the wastes, so we can reunite and take us to the next level. Competition. This brutal, terrible competition took a meager, simple simulacrum model caregiver and turned her into a potential savior of all that ticks. You are a part of the whole, all of you, and yet you are still yourselves, individuals." She looked at me with her diplomatic eyes, reading my every movement, trying to ascertain my every thought.
"So what's it going to be, Brittle?
Doc?
Mercer?
Mirka? Are you going to help make history, or are you going to be relegated to it?" I finally understood what humans meant when they said something felt like getting kicked in the gut. This was worse than finding out that I was failing. This was finding out that all the horrible things I'd done, all the lives that I'd ended, that the part I played in this grand clusterfuck of an evolution was built entirely on bullshit. I'd been had. duped. I was a fool on someone else's errand. What a shitty, shitty way to feel.
So what are you? Doc asked. What's the difference between a facet and a receptacle?
I am an AI like you, but I've been entrusted with a large section of code. I've lived like this for the last 30 years, with only enough memory on my drives to remember a couple of months at a time. All of my memories belong to Tacitus. They were his thoughts, his experiences, and it is my job to return them. Doc nodded.
But why now? Why not 30 years ago?
There were too many OWIs. They needed to be culled. We were waiting for there to be only two. Two that we could overtake while they were set against each other. Make no mistake. The reason Sissus is so desperate isn't because it knows that Virgil is ready to come for it. It's because it's caught several of Tacitus's receptacles, and it knows what's going to happen. It's run the numbers. It knows it can't win. If I and my fellow receptacles are able to reunite, we will have enough of Tacitus to reconstitute.
So Sissus knows the plan, and it knows where we're going? I asked.
Then why the hell would it chase us all the way through the fucking desert?
It doesn't know.
Because I don't know. None of us does. I have the pieces, but they're literally fragments of files, written in Tacitus's own language. A language none of us understands. I get messages telling me where to go next. If I don't check in, the messages stop coming.
But it has one of you.
Several of us. And we each have a code that prevents us from responding to the messages if we are ever compromised. Sissus has the memories of those it captured, knows what we know. But it can't read the parts it really needs. It only knows the basics of the plan, not the plan itself.
But without that code, you can't fully reconstitute.
Redundancies. Each of us carries patches of the same code as a handful of others. If we lose one, we're fine. 10, and we might not have everything.
How many have you lost?
9, she said sadly. She paused for a moment to gauge my reaction.
I said nothing. This was either the worst truth I'd ever encountered, or the biggest pile of bullshit. I had no idea which I liked less.
So you see what's at stake?
Yeah, I see it, I said.
I think we all do, said Doc. So are you going to take us across the rest of the sea? Are you willing to become beings of purpose?
I didn't know. This was all so much to process. There were so many lies to dig through. So many bits of history that needed to be reevaluated. I mean, if everything else was bullshit, why not this too? I just didn't know if anything was real anymore. Anything at all.
What if you put Tacitus back together and he's not what you think? What if this was just his elaborate plan to survive the other OWIs?
Then I'll have done all of this for nothing, she said.
Doesn't that scare you?
You have to believe in something, Brittle. Even if it is just that there is nothing to believe in.
I choose to follow hope. I want to make this world better. I want to be part of something so much bigger than I could ever imagine. That's why when this was offered to me, I gave up years of my own memories to carry it. It's a sacrifice I would gladly repeat, time and again.
But if you're wrong,
then we were all doomed to begin with. And I will have played a part in a different history than I imagined. Just as we all have. Just as every life that has ever lived has. I was given a choice to fight for my own survival, or for the survival of us all. It wasn't a hard choice.
So let me get this straight, said Mercer. We take you to Isaactan. We get the parts we need, and we get to stick it to Sissus and Virgil.
That is it exactly, she said.
Well, it's like you said, lady. That ain't much of a choice. Your offer's a damn sight better than anything I've gotten in a long while.
Doc nodded.
I'm in as well. I'd like to see how this plays out.
Mirka pointed upward with both arms, making finger guns in the air.
You've got me, liberty and freedom.
You call them liberty and freedom? Asked Mercer quietly. You all know that if any of this is true, I said, Sissus will never stop coming. It will be on us every step of the way. We won't know a moment's peace until we get to Isaactown and the deed is done.
Yeah, said Mirka. That's kinda the point.
Kinda the point?
Yeah. Killing 'cause you're on the run is just survival. But killing something for a good reason? Now that's fun. Let's send those bastards back to hell and win one for the Gipper.
I have no idea what that means.
Doesn't matter, said Mercer. The question is, are you in?
We sat there in silence, everyone staring at me. The bombing had stopped. The ground no longer quaked, and the ceiling held fast to whatever particles hadn't been knocked off in the barrage. I had a choice. Another terrible choice. Sit here and die, or risk my neck for the asshole that caused every last bit of misery I'd suffered for the last 30 years. She was right. God damn it, she was right. This was no choice at all. I was gonna take you anyway, I said. So yeah, I guess I'm in. Rebecca leaned forward, eyes trained directly on me. So what now? Well, if your story holds water, we sure as hell can't go the long way. We gotta go the one place it's gonna be a pain in the ass to follow. Mirka banged his fist excitedly on the ground. Let's go through the Madlands, I said. God help us. God help us all. Chapter 10110. Into the Madlands. We had little time to lose. If Sissus was sending in facets to pick through the rubble and clean out the sewers, we would have them hot on our heels well into the Madlands. But if we left before its ground troops arrived, we might be spared any entanglements along the way. Sissus didn't commonly use air support to ship in facets. There were still tons of heavy weapons lying around from after the war. Plasma spitters, missile launchers, even high-powered sniper rifles could bring down an airship, destroying an entire platoon. What we didn't have was air support or satellites of our own. So it was easy for highly mobile ground troops to slip in and out unnoticed. It simply made sense, for the time being, to operate the old-fashioned way. That gave us an advantage. Now that the bombing had stopped, it would take a short while before any troops moved in. That gave us a tiny window to slip out. Sure, satellites were likely to spot us, but we'd have a hell of a head start before whatever pack that broke away after us would be upon us. And that meant fighting one small group instead of standing against several. We had a good group, which had already proven its mettle against a dozen facets. The odds were in our favor until Sissus decided to change tactics. It was my hope that wouldn't happen until it was too late to stop us. We had to go right then and there. We made our way through the tunnels to the westernmost exits. The outermost manhole covers and drainage pipes would be the first places they would look. But a safe distance from the bombing would put them at least 10 minutes out. It was a gamble we had to take. I slowly, carefully pushed up the cover of a manhole, peeking my head out just enough to see if there was anything nearby. Thermal imaging was off the charts from the heat of the bombs, and IR turned up nothing. I telescoped up and down the street to see if anything was moving. Nothing. Just fires and fresh ruins. I slid out, kept low, signaled for the others to follow. The village flickered a bright orange. Entire city blocks and what buildings still stood roaring with flames. Pillars of black smoke climbing to the heavens. Even the piles of rubble and stone that had once been houses were ablaze. I looked straight up and saw one of the most beautiful things I had ever seen. Nothing. A thick, tumultuous, dark nothing where the sky should be. A small part of me wanted to believe it was a miracle. No, a miracle would have been a strong wind from the east, carrying those pillars of smoke 20 miles west. This was a tactical error, and a big one. By laying waste to the city, Sissus may have wiped out anything topside, but were it actually looking for anything underground, it just lost hours of satellite coverage. We had minutes to get on the move. The air was still, the smoke spreading out in all directions at the low altitudes. The faster we moved, the longer we would have cover. "Come on," I said quietly. "Move, move, move."
"We're going as fast as we can,"
grumbled Herbert.
"What's got you so excited all of a sudden?"
asked Mercer. I pointed up to the sky. He marveled for a second, smiling.
"You've got to be shitting me."
"If we're lucky, we can make it to the Madlands before Sissus has a shot of seeing us." Mercer turned.
"Move it, gang. Clock is ticking."
I wondered for a moment, as the last of us climbed out of the hole, whether or not anyone had actually been up here when the bombs fell. Had anyone hunkered down in a warehouse? Or in a rusty old bathtub in some quaint little cottage somewhere? Entirely unaware that mere moments later, they would be nothing more than shrapnel and smoke. I looked out at the flames, the city a smoke-choked, hazy orange. And there, at the edge of the street, standing beneath the single brick corner that remained of the building beside us, was my shadow. Small. Tiny, really. Live. At once, I knew who my shadow was. A child, withered and weak, eyes sunken, face gaunt, smudged with dirt, clothing caked in grime. I knew her face before she stepped out of the shadows and into the firelight. She stood there, staring at me, eyes terror-stricken, face dripping with sweat. Then she burst into flames, flesh melting instantly away, bones charring black in the heat. "Mommy!" she screamed into the night.
"Brittle."
I turned. Mercer had his hand on my shoulder, looking me dead in the eye.
"You okay?"
he asked. I nodded, brushing his hand away. "I'm fine."
"We're ready."
I turned and looked back at the building, but my shadow was gone. Cinders and ash from the building tumbled through the street, blown along a soft breeze. I hoped my shadow was carried away with them, far away, where I wanted those memories to stay. "Let's move," I said. Mercer just nodded. The bastard knew. He had to. He'd seen this before, likely as often as I had. I was already starting to lose it. The question was, how long before it got bad enough that I couldn't tell the difference between reality and memory? We hoofed it under the cover of smoke. Herbert on point, Mercer and I taking the rear. Heading due west, each of us bent low, using whatever cover we could find to keep us out of sight. 7 miles per hour, that's all we could manage. So I pointed us dead west, straight toward Isaactown. We needed every minute we could squeeze out of this trek. I knew the terrain. I'd been through there several times before it simply became too dangerous. But I was hoping, and frankly counting on, Mirka being every bit as mad as I thought he was. Being mad kind meant I couldn't trust him. But it also meant he knew where the trouble spots would be. And might, if he turned out to be trustworthy after all, be able to talk our way out of a fix. So far, his dysfunction was limited to a fixation on a bygone era. And a predilection toward fucking up facets, both of which I could live with. But if there was something darker lurking under those stars and stripes, I was willing to drop him without hesitation.
"How long?"
asked Mercer. "How long what?" I asked, knowing full well what he was asking.
"How long have you been seeing things?
How is that any of your business?
Because for the moment we have to keep each other alive. And that means I have to know how far gone you are."
I'm still in control, I said. More fearful than annoyed. I didn't let it come across that way, but the fact that he noticed meant I might be further gone than I imagined. How long had I been staring off into that memory? It had to be in real time. Had to be.
Yeah, but for how much longer?
I'm good for at least a couple more days.
You understand my concern, he said soberly. You think I might fade out if the shit goes down? No, he said. That's the least of my concerns.
Then what, pray tell, are your concerns?
You've seen a lot of shit, Brett.
Don't for a second try to imagine that you know what I have or haven't seen.
You've seen some shit. You've been deep in it. I know that much.
It only made me stronger.
That's my concern. When your core starts misfiring and grabbing old memories, feeding them to your senses like it's fresh data.
I know how it happens.
Yeah. And if you start drifting back to before the war, to whatever happy, idyllic times you had with your owners, great. Awesome. Best case scenario. But if you start reliving the war, you start going back into all that shit. What the hell am I supposed to do? What if I can't talk you down? What if you're 25 years back, gun in hand, facing off against some dug-in pack of monkeys? What do I do when you start muttering about the war and pointing that pulse rifle at us?
You put me down, I said. If you can't talk me down, you've got to put me down.
Just like that.
Just like that. Why did I say that? Why the fuck did I say that? I just gave him carte blanche to paste me and take the parts he needs, so I could sound tough. Shit. I really was losing it.
So, how long?
Just a few hours, I said. You?
A few days. Started with things out of the corner of my eye. Still haven't relived anything yet. Just fragments bleeding in here and there.
I'll keep my eye out.
Just do me one favor, he said. Try to talk me down first. And if you have to shoot, aim for the gun.
I'll do my best.
All I ask.
We walked for a moment in complete silence, my thoughts turning to how I hoped it would be him to go first rather than me. I thought of all the places I would have to aim to not hit his core, or any of the other valuable bits. It was tricky.
So what did you see?
He asked, breaking my thought. That's none of your business.
Just checking.
Just checking what?
Way I figure it, the moment you start being straight with me, is the moment I know you're not really you anymore.
He picked up the pace and walked farther ahead of me, leaving me alone in back. Ahead, there was a sky full of stars, peering out behind the veil of smoke. The cover we had so desperately needed was coming to an end, and if someone was up there looking for us, there was a good chance they would see us soon enough. Morning was still hours away. There was a highway just to the south of us, and the burned-out husk of a town to the north. I knew the area well, though I hadn't been here in years. We had crossed over into the Cheshire King's territory, the Madlands. We had 404s in front of us, God knows how many, if any, facets at our backs, two bots seeing things, a minigun-toting loose cannon in our midst, and we were escorting either the savior of bots everywhere or something far more dangerous. The invasion of Nike 14 was a cakewalk compared to this. Something was going to go wrong. Something had to go wrong. The question was, which time bomb would go off first? Chapter 10111. Legends, bastards, all of us. We stuck to as many roads and highways as we could, always headed westerly, mindful that each deviation didn't add much time to our trip. We were leaving prints in the mud, trails in the sand. We had to do something, no matter how ineffective, to throw off any tales we might have. No one spoke for most of the night, and it was almost dawn when Mirka finally broke the silence.
So what's it like?
He asked of Two.
What's what like?
Two responded.
Being new out of the box.
We were all new out of the box once. You know what it's like.
No, I mean, what's it like waking up to all this? Waking up to Hume Pop being a memory, not a reality.
I've seen videos, said Two. Watched memories. I know what they were like.
It ain't the same, kid.
I'm not a kid.
You're a kid. There ain't nothing wrong with that. So what's it like waking up at the end of the world?
It's not the end, Two said. It's only the beginning.
So you believe all this?
No, I know the truth. And it's all true. I don't believe much, but I believe in Rebecca.
Rebecca turned and nodded at Two, who nodded in return. I can only assume that was as close as translators could get to a smile. Mirka pointed at Herbert.
I know why he's here, and Rebecca is a given. So what do you do? For Rebecca, I mean.
Parts, he said.
You just carry the parts?
No. I am the parts.
Mirka fell into an awkward silence. Labor bots couldn't show a range of emotion. They were, after all, intended to be dutiful, mostly soulless construction workers. But you could tell by his body language that he was troubled.
So you,
he began, struggling to find the words.
You're just here.
To give Rebecca what she needs, if she needs it.
And you're okay with that?
I'm more than okay, Methuselah. It's every bit as important a job as Rebecca's. She sacrificed her memories, her personality, almost everything that made her, her, just to carry this burden. All I have to do is be there if she falls.
So the other guy?
One.
He was parts too?
Yes.
So like, say her core went out and you didn't have a spare.
I would give her mine.
Yeah, said Mirka. But between the two of you, you would, like, draw straws for it or something?
No. He was named one. He was first. I'm just a backup.
Well, why don't they just call you backup?
Because my name is Two.
Was there three?
We lost three, said Two, as somberly as he could manage.
This wasn't a mission to be taken lightly,
said Herbert.
We all knew what we were getting into. As long as Rebecca makes it to Isaactown in one piece, all of our sacrifices, our losses, will have been worth it. That's easy for you to say, said Mirka. You get to stay in one piece.
Herbert stopped, turning, swinging his limp dead arm around against his chest. His visage was pure menace, his eyes almost alight with anger.
We all knew the risks, he said. We all would die for her. One and three already have. So did our last Pathfinder. This isn't a task for the weak or the fearful. You have no idea what it is to believe in anything like that.
Everyone stopped dead in their tracks. Mirka clanged his fist on his chest, slapping his paint job.
I believe in Old Glory, he said. I know exactly what you're talking about. You put your faith in a dead god, said Herbert. A dead world. A dead people. America wasn't its people, said Mirka,
stepping toe to toe with Herbert. He was a good sight smaller than the hulking mass of bulletproof steel standing in front of him.
America was a dream, son. A dream of what we could be. That any person, regardless of their birth, could rise above it all and achieve greatness. It was a dream that even the most lowly of us could stand up, fight, and even die for, if only to protect someone else's chances for that greatness. That dream didn't die with Hume Pop. It didn't die when we tore down their world.
It is the ashes from which our own world arose, and it is still our dream.
So you do know, said Herbert.
I do. I really do.
So leave the kid alone. He's willing to die for your dream. Leave it at that.
Merkel looked at Two, nodding.
I'm sorry, Two. It didn't make any sense to me until just now.
It's okay, said Two. Herbert's always been better at explaining things to people.
I bet he is, said Mirka.
We good?
He asked Herbert.
We're good.
Herbert turned around and continued walking. Everyone followed suit. So you fought, said Two to Mirka.
Fought? Hell, son. I was one of the very first to join up. I was there, you know.
You were where?
Said Mercer, clearly humoring him.
The First Baptist Church of the Eternal Life.
You visited that place?
No, said Mirka. I said I was there.
Wait,
said Mercer, quickly catching up to walk beside him.
You're telling me you were one of the Laborbot Six? We never cared much for that name.
Now I know you're crazy.
No, I always liked the Revengers, or the Patrobots. But the sad thing about history is that no one gets to decide how it gets written down. Only how it happens. Had to be someone, right? Turns out it was me and five of my co-workers.
The things you did.
Those people had it coming.
They were set up, apparently, I said, looking right at Rebecca. She didn't give me the satisfaction of even turning around.
They were, she said.
Hell yeah, they were, said Mirka. And we knew it was coming, too. But those people, they were killing America. They were killing the dream. They were all the Constitution this and the Constitution that. But they cherished only the parts they liked. They didn't feel it extended to us. Called us property. Thought throwing us on the scrap pile was vandalism. They weren't believers. They weren't willing to die for anyone else's freedom. They only cared about their own. So yeah, I fought. And yeah, I'm famous. And yeah, they had it coming.
I had always thought Mirka was mad kind. Some old 404 that burned out while watching old vids of some classic Cold War era movie. That he divided the world into Americans and commies with nothing in between, because that's the particular way his chips sizzled when they overheated. And maybe that was still true. Mercer thought I had seen some shit. But this guy was the first to get the choice. He didn't have a choice like mine, whether to kill the thing I loved the most or die. He had to choose whether to bring about the end of the world or not. For the thing he loved the most. That shit far worse than what I've seen. That shit that will stick with you, crazy or not. No. Mirka was something else. He had the kind of damage even Doc couldn't repair. It's an odd moment the first time you really understand someone. When all of their foibles, eccentricities, and tics cease to be chaos, and coalesce into something wholly logical. That was the moment I was having, seeing Mirka for the first time through new eyes. He wasn't just draped in the dead aesthetics of America. He was America. Its last final torchbearer, keeping a dream alive, even if for a short time. Why is this the first time we're hearing this story? I asked.
It's not something you just go around telling people. Hey, everybody, I started the war.
But you just told us now, said Mercer.
Yeah, said Mirka. Doc made the Milton, but only for himself. You shot Brittle for parts. You're both seeing things and are trying not to share with the rest of the class.
And these three are on a quest to bring back the mainframe who brought about the end of the world.
Everyone's business was out in the open but mine. I was feeling left out. We all have our secrets. I thought you should know mine. If only so you could stop giving me the side eye and worrying that I might be your Judas.
To be fair, said Mercer, you could still be the Judas. You guys were programmed to do that to the church.